I'm Ross Heide, president of the Lutheran History Center of the West, and I'll admit how I got involved in this sometime along our pilgrimage together. But you have just helped us as we began. And before we turn to the map and say a little bit of what your record indicates, I'd like to do something as traditional as reading a bit of scripture. Most of us remember the Gospel of Luke starts out with a historical note. Luke says, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things which have been accomplished among us, just as they were delivered to us by those who were from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may know the truth concerning the things of which you have been informed." So if we're interested in history, we are in a good company and we're in a good tradition. Much of the references in the book of Hebrews touches upon heritage, that great listing of the saints of the faith. And there is a little portion in the 11th chapter of Hebrews that has these phrases. "Having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on earth," for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. And I thought it would be very fair for us as a bunch of immigrant Lutherans, the second, third, fourth, fifth generation, some first, to recognize that, as Paul Empey one time said, we're all standing on our grandparents' shoulders, and all that we have really is very often dependent upon their sacrifices. Now, the whole matter of keeping history is one of the biggest challenges that we have in our country, and some of you may be aware that for a long time our United States did not have a fit archives. Archival records were kept in the Library of Congress until belatedly they established the Department of Archives. And some of you have been to Washington, D.C., have visited the archives and gone to that rather hallowed place where you may read the Declaration of Independence that's preserved there and kept in an inert gas so that it won't deteriorate anymore. And it's so constructed, as you may have been told by a guide, that that whole case can be covered and lowered into the basement so that in case of some disaster, they can protect that valuable document. Well, I wish we could say and report to you that all historical documents have been safely cared for. The truth is that not many have, and we are especially indebted to some gifted historians who've done an unusual good job. And of course, one of the great Scandinavian archivists and historians was Rolvag. How many of you have read his Giants in the Earth? Evie and I were over at Pacific Lutheran University the other day, and there in their Scandinavian immigrant section, they have a poster that came from the time when that was released. And here is a very, very delightful a picture of a covered wagon of early settlers coming, and then up at the top in large lettering, "Giants in the Earth" by Ole Edvard Rolvag. And then it says the price. Guess what it cost when it was first issued? 75 cents. So if you buy a copy now from Augsburg Fortress Press, you pay a bit more than that. But it's worth every penny because it's quite a classic. I thought I would read the little synopsis chapter toward the end of the book. It's a tribute not only to the group of Norwegians in that book, but to many. It says, "It was as if nothing affected people in those days. They threw themselves blindly into the impossible and accomplished the unbelievable. If anyone succumbed in the struggle, and that happened often, another would come and take his place. Youth was in the race. The unknown, the untried, the unheard of was in the air. People caught it, were intoxicated by it, threw themselves away and laughed at the cost. Rather dramatic picture, isn't it, of the immigrants? And Rollbach is kind of describing those exciting first days and first decades when they made their way. He said there was no such thing as the impossible anymore. The human race had not known such faith and such self-confidence since history began. And so it has been the spirit ever since, the day the first settlers landed on the eastern shores. It would rise and fall at intervals, would swell and surge on again with every new wave of settlers that rolled westward into the unbroken solitude. I reread this book inside the last weeks, and I was as moved by this reading as the first some years ago. And I don't know about you, maybe as we get a bit older, we become more sensitive to the sacrifices of the pioneers. But most of us find that the reading of this chapter of life, especially stories of our own forebears, is a very fascinating activity. There was a historian at Gustavus Adolphus who then went down to Wittenberg and taught there. Her name was Margaret Ermath. She was one of the Sittler family. Her grandfather had come as an immigrant and worked hard and gotten started, and his son had trained to be a minister, served in Ohio, became the Ohio Synod president. And she became very interested in history as a researcher in Chicago and Washington, and then as a professor in those two schools that I named. When they were nearing the celebration of the bicentennial, she had a very interesting suggestion that she got in to the bicentennial committee. She said that her proposal was that immigration and the immigration theme should permeate all the nation's celebration, with special media-oriented exhibits at places like Ellis Island in New York, where so many people entered the country. People would push buttons that would tell them on enormous electronic maps where their ancestors came from, by country, and using computer, even by surname. Opportunities would be given in various areas for tourists to relive the immigrant experience by stagecoach or covered wagon or riverboat. And then she says that in her class at Wittenberg on immigration, the first thing I asked them to do is write a paragraph telling where their parents and grandparents came from and why they came. 9 out of 10 don't know. So I say, don't just phone that little old grandmother of yours. Go home and visit her and find out what she's been trying to tell you all this time. And so they would do it. She observes, our young people don't appreciate the fact that their roots extend into other lands and other times. If they don't know where they have come from, then they can't know what they're going to be. Most of us have adopted one of our heroes in the West, John Muir. Among his writings are these sentences. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. One fancies a heart like our own must be beating in every crystal and cell. That's why I use as the overarching theme for this, history is a jigsaw puzzle. You got to find all the pieces and get them together to have a picture. Did you ever know a person mean enough to hide a key jigsaw puzzle piece when a group was putting it together? I think that's one of the orniest things you can do. Now, my wife here is quite a jigsaw buff, and she likes to put one out when the kids come for a holiday because it's a kind of a continuous thing you can go putter at for a while. But one of the most frustrating things of all is to find that there's a piece missing and then see it on the floor because it fell out when the box was open. Now, you and I know that in our family history, it's a very difficult thing to get the pieces together. And I'll spend a little time more in the session showing you some examples of contemporary histories that have been written. But I'd like to ask you to concentrate for a little bit on immigration. I don't know if any of you in the 1949s and 50s and 51s were in any congregation that got involved in helping bring displaced persons into the community. One of you, two, three, four, five, six. Well, you're going to enjoy this little film that we're going to show, and I'd like to tell you why I'm wearing this t-shirt. Evan and I were in Richmond, California, sent there by you to be missionaries and a pastor in the housing area where they built ships, the Henry Kaiser Shipyards. We were there from 1943 to 1948, and one day the phone rang. And Dr. Paul Empey, the head of Lutheran World Action, phoned me and said, "Ross, I want you to come to New York next month, and in August I want you to go over to Europe, and we're going to make a movie." And he said, "I'm really worried that they won't finish it on time. Church World Service has had a movie crew at Salzburg, Austria for a year, and they still don't have their movie in the can. So I want you to go over and bring it back on October the 1st, because we want to release it as the 1949 Lutheran World Action movie." Well, that was something that moved Ev and me back to the East Coast, and kept me back there for a whole year. And then I was invited to be director of promotion for the Lutheran Resettlement of Displaced Persons. Last October was the 40th anniversary of that, so they called some of us back to Washington for a reunion. And they had a little videotape made by Robert E. A. Lee, who did the Luther movie, and they took excerpts of our reminiscing, and then they edited it with a capsule, a part of that movie, Answer for Ann. Now, this is a kind of generic film on immigration and our participation in it. And so I'd like to ask you to turn your chairs around. There are two monitors here. My wife's all ready to put it on. And you're going to see what's called Answer for Ann number 2. This is a reunion of that group. Here we are.
Years ago, many years ago, a teenager went from door to door looking for the answer to a question of her time. The time was 1949. The question, should her town take in displaced persons? The girl's name was Anne. I was that girl. That is, as a fledgling actress, I played the role of Anne in a prize-winning film called Answer for Anne. My name is Linda Peterson. It was in 1949, so long ago. The film was made to do two things. One, to help church congregations to wonder how they would think about refugees herded into camps in Europe. And two, to let them know what refugees were like, how they lived. Now, over 40 years later, we still have refugees. Their faces are different, and their homelands, but their needs and the question are the same. The 50th anniversary of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service is a good time to take a look at the film again, and to wonder what answer Anne might get if she went about asking her question today. Part of our picture was made in Europe, and these veterans of Lutheran World Action were working there and in our film.
When we knew the film was going to be made in America, we had to have information about what the refugee life was like. But you were right there with them. But how did you find the attitude of the displaced persons during that long time of waiting, before there was anything specific for them to look forward to?
There was lots of despair. Remember, Germany was crushed, crushed, literally crushed. Buildings, cities, everything. And the spirits were crushed. And then you have people in the center of that, I mean, who were enclaves of foreigners.
What was your role in helping prepare so that these refugees, displaced persons, could come to a new life?
Well, still, the first thing was their very life in the camps, because the present is the present. But they were looking to a future, and our job, first of all, was really in the camps. But then we saw very soon that they couldn't go back where they'd come from. Absolutely impossible. Could they stay in Germany, in a broken Germany? So the immigration process simply had to start.
One of the reasons the displaced persons could not return home again was that that country was then occupied by the Soviet Union and was, by the Potsdam, or prior to that, Yalta Agreement, embodied into the Soviet Union. And they had experienced such terror, one might say, that they were not about to return, but they retained that homesickness.
The function of the service to refugees was really like that of the old matchmaker. You know, you read about that in novels out of Europe, the matchmaker who matches the daughter to the son and so on, family to family. And we were really matchmakers. And so on the one side, the receiving side, were these assurances. Yes, we have a place, there's a job, we're going to receive these people. And then our job was, it wasn't really disqualifying, it was that, does somebody match this?
One question I heard again and again at the DP camps and in the study centers, will they want us over in America? Are they interested in us? Do they care about us? And I really felt strange because I couldn't answer.
Oh, I don't think anyone really could answer that until people had an opportunity to experience it. It's sort of like saying, we'll take our chances and we'll do what needs to be done, and yes, there will be some reception, but I think all of us were really a bit frightened.
Yeah, but what depressed me was those displaced persons felt they had absolutely no hope unless somebody did want them. And that's what really made me ache for them.
And really, one could say, they would ask, what in this situation will help us keep going? Where, we don't know, but we trust God that He will open doors.
This whole resettlement effort, Howard, you know some of the people who came to this country, artists, some of the professors, some of the workers in the community. But I think what really made the difference was the people going into the congregations and the congregations having to find a home and beginning to understand and know what it means to be homeless. And if anything, that should help the Lutheran churches and the Christian churches in this country to understand the plight of the homeless, whether the homelessness is the result of being out of one's home two blocks away or out of one's home two continents away. Somehow or another, I think that that experience of finding homes, finding places to live, finding community and building community, prepared us for the kind of world we didn't dream was going to be in the next 20, 30, and 40 years.
This opportunity of resettling refugees really kind of turned the church around from being ingrown to say their plight is our opportunity to show that our faith is more than words, but it's really genuine. And what we found was that the congregations had to come to grips with a basic question, what does it mean to be the family of God in this place? And if we're not interested, and always the words of Luther haunted them, you know, Luther put it all in that one sentence. How do we know that the love of God dwells within us if we take upon ourselves the need of our neighbor? And Luther wasn't in the stratosphere. He was right down where people are hurting. And he said, if they're hurting and you're not helping, you hardly can be a Christian. And this really dug into the heart and soul of the character of the church in every community.
And now for our film. Beginning very soon. So your assignment on this topic will be an essay. The subject will be why our town should take in displaced persons. Because you see, it's not just a problem for the U.S. It's a problem for us. Are there any questions? Anne?
Could you tell us how many words?
500 will be enough. You can use the usual sources of information.
500 words, Jimmy. 500 words seems like an awful lot in class. After I graded Dad Stiles for material, he's the editor of the local newspaper, you see. Oh, brother. Jillions of words about DP. And I just didn't know where to start.
A tough question for anybody, anywhere, much less a little high school girl. So, child of a newspaper man, she went and took a bowl.
Hello, Annie. What do you got?
Salt for these, Mr. Giacomo.
Sure.
Mr. Giacomo, can I ask you a question?
Why, sure.
Well, it's for school. The question is, should our town take in DPs?
Why do we got to take them in? Suppose we do take them in, where are they going to live? My boy just back from the army got to no place to live in with his wife. He going to live with us. Who comes first, GI or DP? We got to no room. I feel sorry. Sure, I feel sorry about all the trouble they got over there. But if they trouble, we got enough.
Asking questions was a good idea. I was getting all the wrong answers. Instead of finding out whether we should take DPs in, I was finding out we didn't want them at all.
Maybe, Anne thought, she'd get the best answer at town hall.
You see, Anne, these DPs might well become a public burden. And we have our own people to take care of. Hospital care, welfare, jobs. Our own come first. And we don't want any more on the road.
I can remember it as if it were yesterday. They were real people in a real town, and what they said was what they felt. It hurt Anne. It hurt me. Even outside the frame of the movie we were making, I got as upset in real life as Anne did in her story.
go to the store. And there I did one more interview.
Taking DPs here, is that what they teach you in school? A lot of foreigners. What are you sending all that money over there for? Now they want to come over here and run us out of house and home. Take them in here. Hmm. And where'd you get those ideas? We haven't got enough for ourselves. It's hard enough to get along as it is without them.
I've never heard anything like that before. My question had gotten bigger and bigger until something seemed to be pretty wrong somewhere. It was going to take a lot more than 500 words to answer it for me.
A seemingly simple school assignment, but it cut to a young girl's heart and mine. She went where both of us always looked for answers, where both of us learned our lesson.
Homework. Just a little old assignment for civics class. An essay. Trying to find out if our town should take in DPs. And the plain ordinary old truth is, nobody wants them. People are so mean. Some of the same people I see coming into church every Sunday, talking so mean. I'm all mixed up.
And all this because you asked some questions about DPs. Have you ever seen a DP?
No.
Would you like to?
Yes, where?
Right in here. You know, I was over in Europe just after the war, helping out over there. Well, our church headquarters has sent me a film. I was just going to run it. Suppose we look at it together. And snap out the light, will you, please? Now, suppose we turn on the picture, and you'll have a better idea of the actual conditions under which DPs live. This is Germany, Anne. And those are DPs. Displaced person and his family.
No mother?
Guess not. They may have come from Latvia, Poland, Estonia, anywhere. They don't really know where they're going. They only know they've got to get away.
He's scared.
He shouldn't be. See the emblem? It's ours. Lutheran World Action.
Where are they going?
A DP camp. This one's near Nuremberg. Used to be a German prisoner of war camp. Now it'll be their home. If you call this a home.
Look, he found a friend.
That's good.
When the
day of departure comes, it's a special day. First, the service of farewell. And when the farewell service is over, the young men leave. Some of the first to leave for America. Some may go, but some must stay behind. Many must stay behind. Too many. Too many people just like us, our neighbors, our brothers, far away, waiting for us here to find room. They're asking us, Anne, whether this is to be, after so much wandering, the end.
And willing hands to work.
We always could, and we'll keep.
keep on.
Yes, and we'll do more than that. You see, Anne, it isn't just a question of food and housing and bearing burdens. It's keeping hope and faith alive. I can't say it as well as a DP. A real DP told it to me just before I left his camp. He said, "We know what it means to have doors shut. Our doors to our homelands are closed to us. But God has other doors. These doors have been opened by the love of our brethren from overseas. When we fled from our homes, our faith in God and man had dwindled until only faith in God was left. Now begins the revival of our faith in man. God is truly gracious. Our deep thanks to him and to our brethren will ever endure."
I would say to my grandchildren, when everything seems dark, when the past is cut off, the future is utterly impenetrable, and the present conditions of life are miserable, where can one go? One must simply say, with God all things are possible, and then one ventures.
And that is the answer for Anne, for the refugees then and for the refugees now. All things are possible. Refugees by the thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, were taken into our country, our homes, our hearts. The answer is really so simple and still valid. Refugees are exactly like us, with the same hunger for freedom, the same yearning for a future with hope, the same faith that our forebears had when they crossed the ocean a few years earlier. My own grandmother came across as a DP about the time that we were filming Answer for Anne. In a nation of immigrants, the term DP lost its meaning and became simply delayed pilgrim. We like to think that our little film helped, that in its simple, modest way, it became a record, a document of its time, and perhaps even of ours.
Any memories to any of you?
Yeah.
Some of you indicated that your congregation helped sponsor DPs. Could you share a few sentences of memories with that? What do you remember about your church's experience? Do you have any memories?
We had, was it 49 families, Dan, that came to Gloria Day in Olympia? From Latvia and Estonia.
49?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We had a reunion here in our church on Gloria Day.
Did you really?
The 40th, their 40th anniversary.
What happened?
We had what? How many people showed up for the dinner?
Well, it must have been, well, I don't think they were all there, but I would say
30-some
anyway.
That's exciting. Because they had scattered by this time, I'm sure.
They're in Australia and they're all over the world.
Yeah. They had a relative in some other community, and so they networked and they went to join each other. Sometimes they went from a rural area into a metropolitan area to be near others. They clustered all around the United States. But the family had sponsored them, the church, gave them an opportunity to come and get settled. Any other memories from those of you whose churches took any of these people. Yes?
Our church didn't, but our son's church in Port Orchard, Washington, it's called Elam Lutheran Church.
Yeah.
We took in a very large Vietnamese family.
Oh.
And we were there when they first came in about 10 years ago. They were boat people. From the little grandmother, I guess the grandfather was dead, to the father and mother, to the son who was married and the little children. The only one that spoke English was the son, because he had done some work for the Americans. But we've seen them in churches. We go come back and visit Washington every year. They all learn English. The little children are bright little children, and they are so grateful. A couple of years ago we came, and they remembered we were the grandparents of the little children, the parents of Bob, and the old grandmother made like egg rolls, a great big, and presented at the door one day and gave us this gift. They've just gone in the community beautifully.
Isn't that a delightful report? Any more? You're being too shy to share? Yeah.
We took books from the Vietnamese families over to our church, and one of the babies was born on the boat as they were escaping, and they had. We decorated a home for them, and children are now confirmed, and they have brought more of their family over now, and so it's
yes, that often happens. They bring other relatives, and so it really becomes a continuing group. Ev and I, when I finished my task on the East Coast, came to Berkeley to a small congregation, and that church, not more than 170 members, sponsored three families, and was really enriched by it. It brought the church very close together, because they had to find work, they had to find an apartment, they furnished the apartment, they had everything in it, they had the towels and what have you, and food stocked into the place, and it was a real enriching thing. For our congregation, there are many stories that come to mind about it. Ev, she's signaling me that it's almost time for us to think of wrapping up. We thought that we'd close up by, say, 15 after or so. Yes, Ev?
Let me just add something to what you're saying. Beside taking the people in, one of the jobs I had in high school was loading mail trains in and out of Chicago. And if you don't think that people weren't sending, at least everybody in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa had to be, a box every week to somebody in Europe, 45, 6, and 7. I want to assure you that every day that I worked, we loaded a boxcar going to New York City.
Yep.
Straight food.
That's right.
Coffee, sugar, and as my German roommate said in college, if it wasn't for you Lutherans, half of my country would have starved to death. He said, we had absolutely nothing after the war. It wasn't for your care package. We didn't know what we were going to do.
This is really true. In 1948, I attended the Executive Committee of the Lutheran World Federation. They met in Holland. And there I recall hearing Bishop Hans Meiser of Bavaria. Now remember that under the Nazis, the leaders of the churches were the last rung on the ladder. And they got very little, and as things got tough, it was almost desperate for them. He told us that at the very conclusion of the war, that supplies were rushed in, and Dr. S.C. Michael Felber of the Lutheran World Federation rushed things in quickly to the churches and to the pastors' families. And he said, we were almost starving, and those food gifts kept us alive. You know, when you look at a very saintly man saying this, and then you realize that you did some things perfunctorily, but for them it was truly life and death. Now, this is a tremendous contrast between the preparations and the reception for immigrants, for that which was there very often for your great-great-grandparents. There was often not a well-organized reception committee. There was hardship, there was suffering. there was real difficulty. But somehow they made it, and often there was a little clustering of people, and at times the church was there. But sometimes when the immigrants came in little settlements, there were no pastors with them. But thank God, some of those lay people had the kind of faith that they banded together and they organized congregations. They even built churches. And at that point, then they said, well, we should try to find a pastor. And so they searched and they did. Now, this is the backdrop for history of the various churches and especially of our own Lutheran family. And we're going to move this on through some other paces and other stages in the next few days, sessions that we'll be together. Do you have any quick evaluation? What did this film do for you? Did it reawaken any memories? Was it powerful? I was very touched too there. I was there when almost every frame of that movie was shot. And at times, we were writing the script one day ahead of the shooting in Europe. And those things there bring back what was to me a powerful experience. But the joyous thing was to watch them coming and being welcomed to America. And as you have pointed out, they have become a part of the community and often of the congregations and of our country. Yes?
Is that film going to be available to the churches?
Yes, it's available in each state through the Lutheran Social Service or the Lutheran Immigration Service. And every office of Lutheran Social Service has one or two copies, and you may call them and book it and use it for a meeting of an organization or Bible class or women's group, whatever, and might find it helpful and interesting. They're showing it at all the seminaries. In October, I have to go to the seminary in Berkeley where they're going to show it there. And they try to orient the seminary students to that chapter of the ministry of the Lutheran Church because some of them were not at the stage where they were could remember much of it. Next time, we're going to talk about putting together history. If you want to do something in preparation, try to take a few minutes and put down a memory of one of your grandparents. What do you remember about them? What were their gifts? What's the happiest memory of them? What about grandma's cooking? What about granddad's ability to do everything? How much time did you get with them? What stories did you hear from them? Write a paragraph or two, because I'd like us to kind of experiment with that in the next few days. I think we want to surprise everybody by not being late for chapel. I want to say thank you very much for coming.